Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
You're listening to the podcast, so there I was. This is episode 57.
57.
Yeah, with Gunny. And this one's titled A Water Buffalo for Tam Key.
What a great story.
Absolutely hilarious.
There's a photo. It's like a famous photo, right, that goes along with this story.
Yeah.
There's a water buffalo being hoisted under a helicopter.
That's right.
And so that goes with this story.
Right. It does indeed. We don't have that photo, sadly. But here's the cool thing. You may remember in last week's show with Gunny, he talked about a photo that was of a buddy's x-ray that was taken after he inadvertently swallowed his wings after his winging ceremony. And it came along with a poem at the bottom. He hadn't seen the x-ray in over a year, came back to the States at an Ellison Field Oak Club / bar and BOQ. There was a picture of that x-ray on the wall. And underneath it, a poem that said, "His wings of gold he wears with pride, not on his chest, but deep inside."
Yeah.
But he didn't have that picture. And so we asked you wonderful listeners, hey, help us out here. And what happened, Fig?
We got it.
Thanks to the great Toontini.
Thank you, Toontini.
You may remember back, it was episode 29.
It was our first Navy helicopter pilot.
Yes, right? Our first helicopter pilot. Yeah. He left his footprint on my face, episode 29. Captain Tunick is the author of American Quest and has the honor of being our first helicopter pilot. But he's the one that sent me the link in Facebook with a picture of that x-ray and that poem underneath it.
It's a great picture.
The coolest thing to me is that we've already got enough listeners that we just put the word out and said, hey, we want to see this. And you took care of us. Means you're doing what? You're sharing.
Thanks, great Toontini.
And everybody else is sharing. The show is growing. So keep doing that, please, folks.
Who doesn't like good aviation stories? I mean, come on.
Exactly. And here's the other thing we have to do, thinking of people who are listening and sharing and supporting. We've got two new patrons this week, Fig. We've got Mike Price and Cal Stewart.
Thank you, gents.
Indeed. Thank you very much. They are now pilots on sothereiwas.us/Patreon. You too can be a pilot on Patreon and support us. Your love for the show can translate into meaningful support by becoming a pilot at sothereiwas.us/Patreon. And for a little over a buck a show, you can help us cover the cost of creating quality content like this. Can't spare the change? Hey, no worries, right? You can visit our sponsors, and using the codes that we give you, this incentivizes them to continue supporting us while you enjoy their fantastic products. And you can rest assured, hey, Fig, are you going to endorse something that isn't good or you haven't tried?
No way. No way.
Not me. No. No. So you're going to get stuff that we've tried and we know we like and we think you'll like, and you get a sweet deal in the process.
Yeah, great discounts.
And our sponsor this week is Robin's Bird Brain Designs. Custom etched gifts like, say, coasters with your squadron logo or your tail number on it, something like that. Made a great gift for many members of your family, as I recall.
I got great gifts. Matter of fact, they were squadron logos personalized with everybody's name or call sign that I call them anyway.
Yep, right.
It was awesome. We got them everywhere. Everywhere I go, I see them now.
Nice. Very cool. So reach out to Robin at Robin's Bird Brain Designs and get your custom gift etched. Show someone you put some thought into their gift. Hey, this week, the show picks up from where we left off last week. He talked about his last day in Vietnam and not riding a CH-46. He'd rather ride a convoy truck, hoping not to get shot.
That's right.
And I can't say I disagree with that sentiment. Not my favorite airplane to ride on.
No, mine neither. I have a story there, and I'm not going to tell it now, but I made a deal with God that day, and I haven't been on a helicopter since.
There you go. Well, God keeps his end of the bargain. You got to keep yours.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah.
Right on. He talks about getting back from Pensacola, and he rolls in pretty quickly, though, about his friend One Eye, who got that call sign. What he said was the most heroic act he'd ever heard of. It was One Eye's last mission in Vietnam.
That's right. Oh, that'll make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, that story.
Oh, just terrifying. But then he moves into the story, The Water Buffalo for Tam Key.
Oh my gosh, that's another one of those, 50 crunches. It felt like, after I got done laughing.
And they're lucky. The lucky Marines didn't die trying to make this whole thing right. That's the amazing part of this.
That's the scary part, right?
It was. I think we've been yammering on quite a bit. A water buffalo for TMK is going to be the highlight of this one. Well, no. One Eye may be the highlight. You know what? They're all great stories. They're all great.
Hey, and before we press on, I think we need to say something about Brian Scholl.
We do indeed.
We lost an amazing aviator last week. It was very sudden. And he's episode 54. It was almost a month to the day after we recorded it, but it was like
3 weeks, just shy of 3 weeks.
After we recorded it, but it was a week after his recording.
Oh, a week after his show came out, yeah.
Yeah. He was giving a talk in front of a big crowd in Reno, Nevada, I guess. Right. And then collapsed off stage and he was DRT.
Yep.
So
very sad. Yeah, a legend of aviation. And the interesting thing to me, if you go back and listen to that show, is how many profundities that man uttered.
Right.
Talking about life and perseverance and attitude. And he was pretty humble about all the people that helped him, that he, wasn't the greatest guy. And not everybody liked me. Some people hated me. But he didn't let it ruffle him. He just kind of went, attitude and perseverance. And stick with what you want to do and quit or move forward. Well,
I really felt like it was an honor we got to talk to him then. And now I feel like that was just a gift.
It truly was.
You're going to enjoy this episode full of stories, though. I can promise you that.
Gunny is a scream.
Don't let go of the collective.
Here's Gunny.
I'm just kidding. No, I'm not.
There I was, crossing the pond, and you could see that I wasn't exactly...
So there I was. So then I got home, went to Pensacola. There were about eight of us from my squadron, or the immediately sister squadron, who were all instructing at HD-8. And that was good fun, because we would do stuff. I mean, we were teaching these lieutenants how to fly, and they were all going right to Vietnam. They might go to HMMT in Santa Ana for 6 or 8 weeks. Get a cup of coffee. We got better coffee. We went to the river and we wanted them to learn stuff. So we teach them stuff that was a little beyond the syllabus, or at least demonstrate stuff that was a little beyond the syllabus.
Sure.
That was really good fun. One of the things that wasn't fun, that we were still in touch with our friends in the squadron. And every month or so you'd get a letter saying, oh, Bob got killed, or that new guy got killed. He might not have got here before you left. He got killed, and the people got flew into a mountain in a cloud. They're directed in by a TPQ. Do they have TPQ when you're there?
No.
No, but Spicer talked about it in his book.
It's a
radar control.
Yeah.
And then it was after I came back that one of the guys I had checked out in country and was a really good friend performed probably the most heroic act of flying I've ever seen in my life, or ever encountered in my life. I didn't see it because I was back home. But this guy had been my co-pilot, and I checked him out and showed him where the area TAOR was, and told him how to do certain approaches that they hadn't seen yet, and we got along really well.
What's TAOR?
Tactical area of responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course. Just slipped my mind.
Yeah, that's right.
So he had been 1-16 on his first mission when he was watching everybody. And I don't really remember whether he was one of the hungover pilots or one of the still drunk pilots, but that was his first combat mission. His last combat mission was on medevac standby, where you'd get that about once a week, where the four pilots and the four crewmen and the two corpsmen would sleep in the ready room.
Okay.
And you would launch only if there was an emergency. When the emergency call comes in, the operations duty officer would say, okay, this will be a launch, whereupon the corpsman and the left seats, would run out, get in the aircraft, strap in, get the engines going, get the rotors engaged, while the right seats would be taking down details of the mission, mission number, grid coordinates, last enemy contact, frequencies, call signs. So right seats run out, climb up, get up there, launch. Climb to 2,500 feet and start heading toward where the zone is. Now, they don't have any GPS. They've got paper maps, and there are no lights down there because in 1968, when this was in Vietnam, there wasn't any electrification of the rural areas. There weren't any lights in the houses. You couldn't tell where the towns were. Anybody who had so much as a kerosene lantern in his hooch was asleep by now because they get up with the sun. They're farmers.
Right.
So call sign 1-4. This is Clip Clop Medevac inbound. I think we're getting pretty close to you. Do you see us? Yes, we have you in sight. You're headed. Of course, sometimes you'd get the 1-4, the air controller just didn't understand things. Yes, I see exactly where you are. You're right at my 12 o'clock. Okay. Now that doesn't do any damn good. That tells me that he's looking at me.
Yeah.
But this guy was a little better. It says you're coming at, we're at your, 10 o'clock right now. We're going to illuminate the zone. The zone is a dry stream bed. The dry stream bed is oriented north-south. We don't have any appreciable wind. The last time we took fire was from the north. We suggest you come in from the south at treetop level. Okay, how are you going to illuminate the zone? Well, we'll illuminate it with three lights. And the wind, such as it is, will be coming from the point of the triangle. Okay, well, you look down and it's an equilateral triangle. They say, come on in, come in from the south. We think Charlie is probably pulled back. But we do have five emergency medevacs. Now, five is the max you can carry in an H-34. So one guy tells us, wingman, follow me down to 1,000 feet. Start circling at 1,000 feet. I'll make the pickup because I can get all of them on board. If you see any fire coming at me,
okay,
give me all the suppressive fire you can. Get them to keep their heads down. Okay, we'll do that. He comes in, comes down, and he's coming in from the south fast as you can go by. And now the way you slow down fast in a helicopter is you drop the power completely. You stand it on its tail. And when the rotors are pointed aft, you pull in power and you get a giant speed break there and you slap it down as soon as you get zero ground speed.
Okay.
As he's coming, just as he's starting the flare, Charlie gives indication that he has not retired completely. And when the wingman was looking down, he said the tracers looked like a bicycle wheel. And one eye was right at the hub.
Oh, okay.
And he knew he was at the hub because
my gosh,
that's when his co-pilot went, are you okay? Are you okay? Nothing. Nothing. He hears nothing. So, shit. And now I'm flying solo.
Yeah.
Sets it down. The Marines start carrying the emergency medevacs. And Charlie starts rushing the aircraft.
Okay.
The crew chief, who is a remarkable guy from Akron, Ohio, was credited with, I think, 12. It might have been 18, but it was 12. KIAs within 50 meters of the aircraft.
Wow.
And as that's all happening, one eye gets shot through both eyes and he's totally blinded. And he says, Corporal Bush, I just got shot in the face. It looks like the co-pilot's dead. You're going to have to get us out of here because we ain't staying here. I'm going to pick it up. You tell me where to go. And the crew chief says, nope, no problem. No problem. I got you out of here, Lieutenant. I got you. You might have been a captain, but I got you out of here. Just pick her up right away. But we got eight guys on board now, so you're probably going to have to bounce it a couple of times. Interjection. A helicopter is wonderful because it can hover carrying a lot of weight. However, if it is moving forward beyond about 15 knots, it can carry a lot more weight because of an aerodynamic thing that I... is too complicated to be able to explain to fixed-wing pilots.
It's magic. It's magic.
Yeah, it's magic. It's magic. If you're going 15 knots, you can carry a lot more. So one of the techniques is to get up into a hover and start moving forward, and you'll lose lift and you bounce and you bounce. And then when you get up to 15 knots, then you can get. So, okay, cover, go straight ahead, straight ahead. There's nothing in front of you. Bounce it again, bounce it again. You're getting, you pick it up. Pick, the trees are getting pretty big, Captain. You got to pick it up. Gets up, he gets it out. Wingman comes down, joins on him, takes over the controlling. They get out and they land at the mouth of the Quaviet River near the DMZ. In the meantime, his wingman has called for backup. A couple more aircraft have launched to come out. These guys, I think, were still in their pajamas, except Marines don't wear pajamas. And they come out. An hour later, One Eye was on a hospital ship in surgery. He got evacuated. He was on the ship for a couple of days. And I'll tell another story in the next half about when he resumed flying. Eventually, he got shipped back to the States, and he was put in the Eye Center in Philadelphia. And he was there for a year. Eventually regained the sight with one eye, but not with the other. Because the other eye was organic fertilizer someplace back in Guangdong Province.
Oh, wow.
During that time, his wife, who was a Navy nurse, whom he had taught to fly, had a weekend off to fly to Bermuda, and she got Bermuda triangled and was never heard from again.
Oh.
And at that point, he said he was just about ready to check it in. He said, I didn't see much future of me. But then another guy in the squadron showed up in Philadelphia. A guy who lived in Jersey nearby. Says, I got to get to Santa Ana. I thought you might like to come along as a co-pilot and navigator for me. And one I said, yeah, I will. He put together an AWOL bag. They got in the, I seem to recall it was a brand new 1969 Mustang convertible. They drove across the country. And one I said, that saved my sanity. That was absolutely terrific. He put me on a flight back to Philly. When we got there, and when I got back to the Naval Hospital in Philadelphia, they didn't even know I was gone. Been gone a week. That's how crowded the Naval Hospitals were in 1968. Just to tie that up into a nice little bow, 25, 30 years later, there was a reunion of 2-4,
2nd Battalion, 4th Marines,
and all 8 guys were there. Every man he had evacuated.
Wow.
Was still alive and was there to say thank you.
Wow, that is eye-watering.
Yeah, it is. It's okay. We can take a, if you want to take a break and water your eyes and acknowledge some of the people who make this possible.
Let me take a minute and mention our sponsor, Robbins Bird Brain Designs. She offers a wide range of customization options for their coasters, including squadron logos and call signs, organization logos, and even aircraft instruments. These unique designs are perfect for anyone in the military or aviation industry, or for anyone who appreciates the beauty of these intricate designs.
Their attention to detail and commitment to quality is evident in every piece they create, making their coasters a truly special, one-of-a-kind gift. Whether you're looking for a gift for a friend, family member, or a special way to show appreciation to a colleague or client, Robbins Bird Brain Designs has got you covered.
Their custom etching services are not limited to coasters either. They can also create custom designs on a variety of other items, including plaques, cutting boards, or even a laptop or iPad. Their product customization is perfect for anyone who appreciates the beauty of personalized gifts.
Overall, Robbins Bird Brain Designs is an excellent choice for anyone looking for a unique and thoughtful gift. Their custom etching services are unparalleled, and their commitment to quality and customer satisfaction is second to none.
RobbinsBirdBrainDesigns.com. So you've got notes about a water buffalo.
Oh.
Safety wiring the brown bar.
What was the what
first
about
night
the
of the fight at Dido?
Oh, safety wiring that. Oh, he was such a doofus. Okay. Okay. one of the great guys. Okay, 362 went to Vietnam on board the USS Princeton. An LPH, set sail from Long Beach and took about 6 weeks to get to Vietnam. And that all counted towards 13 months.
Perfect.
They got there. And one of the original astronauts, as we call that first group of pilots, it was a guy, may his memory be for a blessing. His name was Roger Cook. At one point, he had a co-pilot who was the least competent person ever to escape the training command.
Okay.
And takes off, does the first landing. Said, okay, your turn. The guy just barely can barely keep it right side up. And helicopters inverted are not fun. Comes back. Then, okay, I'll fly it for now. Roger flies it all the way back. He says, why don't you try this approach? He grabs the aircraft from him, takes a plane. Why don't you just sit on your hands for the rest of the hop, okay? And the FO says, yeah, okay. They get back to Kiha. Kiha was the helicopter base, which was related to Chulai as the fixed wing base. We had some Phantoms, mostly A4s at Chulai.
Okay.
And 34s, 46s, and Hueys at Kiha. So they get back. Now, an H-34, for those of you who are in the special class, is an aircraft on wheels. You can taxi it. You don't have to hover taxi it like a Huey, which is on skids. And as they're taxiing in, Roger calls down to the crew chief, says, hey, Sergeant, can you cut me off about an 18-inch length of safety wire, please, and hand it up to me? Well, sure, Captain, I'll be glad to. That's it. Hands it up. And as they're shutting down, he says to the co-pilot, he says, hey, Doofus, can you do this with your hands? Can you hold your hands out like that?
Almost like prayer, but hands. Okay.
Yeah. He says, yeah, I think I can do that. And he does it. And Roger takes that safety wire and reaches down and he goes, and safety wires his thumbs together. See ya. Climbs back down. Now, if you'll recall, the H-34, the pilot sits about 14 feet up.
Yeah, it's way up. It's a needle climb bird. Up
using both hands to get up there.
I imagine you need both hands to get down unless you want to do it in one step.
And he's sitting there, and all the troops in the squadron said, hey, look at that dumb lieutenant. You see what Captain Cook did to him? Captain Cook had a reputation as being resourceful. Pretty good pilot. He was another one of the guys who was back at HD8 when I got home.
Okay.
Said, hey, Gunn, you're welcome home. Glad you're back.
So I think it's in the glossary. HT is a helicopter training squadron. So
you have a glossary for this website? For this,
absolutely.
For this,
so there I was. .us/ glossary and all the terms.
STIW.
So there I was.
Oh, you say it out.
It's just an abbreviation. Yeah, just an abbreviation. Yeah.
Okay, Roger Cook was he was a cowboy from Colorado.
Okay.
And I don't know where he went to school. I don't know how he got his commission, but he was in 362 pretty much the entire time he was in the Marine Corps. And since after getting his wings. So there came this time in I Corps in late 1965 that some Marines had killed a water buffalo.
Uh-oh.
Not knowing that water buffaloes were frequently one of the major assets of a little village. The water buffalo was important because it pulled the plow. The cows gave milk. They gave meat. I mean, it was a very important asset. So they shot the by accident. Now, one of the great images of Vietnam is a picture of a helicopter carrying a buffalo in a sling on a long cable suspended below the helicopter, and the water buffalo is hanging here looking absolutely helpless, right? You're going to about to hear the rest of the story, right?
Paul Harvey, good day. The rest of the story?
So when the Marines accidentally killed this water buffalo, a frag came down to 362 saying, we've got to replace the water buffalo. It'll be a really good way of helping the hearts and minds get won. So, Ugly Angels, find a water buffalo and give it back to the village of Tamkee. Okay. Who knows anything about water buffalo? Who knows cattle? Oh, Captain Cook. He knows. He knows all that stuff. He's a cowboy. So they go into the village and they bought a bullock water buffalo and put a rope around its neck and get a bucket full of rice and dangle the rice bucket in front, dangle the rice bucket in front of the buffalo and it follows him in. They build a little ramp up to the H-34 and the water buffalo walks up the ramp and circles and lies down right next to the crew chief seat. But he falls asleep. And they say, okay, well, we're going to give it back to the
unbelievable
village of Tamkee. Fly up to Tamkee. I think one of the photographs I sent to Repeat was an aerial view of the town square of Tamkee.
Okay. I'll look for that then. Because what I do for the listeners, if you're listening to this on a podcatcher, like podcasts, or I don't know if it's podcaster in iOS on your iPhone or iPad, I embed photos that each of the guests send to us within chapters of the podcast as it goes out. So as it switches chapters, you should see some different photos, and I'll try and put the water buffalo or the town of Tamkee with the water buffalo story in there, if and I can find it.
Yeah. So they take off. They're going to render unto Tamkee what Tamkee deserves. They're going to give them water buffalo back. Fly down there. Now, Tamkee, for those of you who don't have an image of it, is one of those beautiful old French colonial villages that the French had built up. It had colonial white stucco town hall with a long, long, long greenway in front of it with beautiful elm trees subsequently cut down. It was really beautiful. So Roger's making his approach in here and he's coming down. And before he makes the approach, on his way up there, they get up to 2,500 feet where the air is cooler. And the water buffalo wakes up. And the water buffalo looks around and says, "Oh shit, this isn't right." And doesn't like it. So he starts walking forward. And the center of gravity
commits suicide.
Goes way, way, way forward, and the aircraft starts going like this. And they say, "Oh, get him back! Get him back! Get him back!
Oh, don't, picking up get steam
that, under control." And he starts going
backward. No.
And now they're in extremis at this point. Get that fucking animal under control! And he starts coming forward, and then boom. We thought some lead injection was required, sir. Shot the thing right between the eyes.
Now down two water buffalo.
There, and he sees lined up in this beautiful town square, the town fathers of Tamkee, South Vietnam, with top hats and tails, cutaways. And a little brass band is playing. And what Roger said to himself at that point was,
"Oh, you got to be shitting me.
Oh, you got to be shitting me." He comes in there, lands in front of him, kicks the water buffalo out, and takes off and gets back home. I hope we dodged a bullet on that one. Next day, in the ready room.
Wow.
First sergeant comes down, says, "Is there First Lieutenant Cook in the ready room?" "Yeah, that'd be me, First Sergeant. What can I do for you?" "Group commander would like to see you, sir. Come with me, please." "Can I be up after?" "No, sir. Come with me now, please." So he gets marched up to the group commander's office, and the bird colonel is there. And who else is there? But there are four of the founding fathers of Tamkee in their top hats and cutaways and all that. And the colonel says, "First Lieutenant Cook, I think Mr. Nguyen Cao Ky would like to speak to you." He looks at him, comes to attention, and the mayor says, "Is very kind of American Marines to replace town water buffalo that was accidentally killed by American Marines. Village of Tamkee had hoped very sincerely to have a living water buffalo to replace formerly living water buffalo. And Roger sees what's going on, and he breaks the position and says, a living water buffalo. Shit, Colonel, we must have misunderstood. We can do that. We'll get him. We'll get him a living water bubble. We could probably do that today or tomorrow. And that's when they learned carry it externally so it can't screw up the center of gravity of the aircraft.
Sling load it. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was a sharp son of a gun.
Funny.
That's what a great recovery.
I thought it was going to go out the ramp out the back or something though. At the
We did have one man carrying some Arvins one time. There were crew chief said, "Hey, before we take off, sir, I think they left something back in the radio compartment. Let me check it out." And he went back to the radio compartment, which was way aft of the center of gravity of the aircraft. Picks up, and there's some rags, and there's a grenade with no pin that was wrapped in rags. So just about so it would shake loose and blow when they got to altitude. That was a close call. And I remember that was a crew chief from Texas. Don't remember his name. Actually, I do, but I don't remember a way of disguising it at all. Who one time had to replace an engine. And while he replaced an engine, he also got some paint. And underneath the rudder pedals, where the black skid-proof paint goes on the plane commander's side, he painted right and left. Good way of
drinking them around. Yeah.
This is amazing stuff.
That's great.
Absolutely amazing.
That is rich.
Yeah.
One of my roommates in pre-flight was a sailor who was hoping to become a backseat driver in a Phantom, which he did.
Okay.
And he ended up getting shot down and spent about 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton. I always admired the hell out of anybody who could survive that. He and I got together for a happy hour in San Diego, maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
I hadn't seen him the entire time. I said, what do you take away from being a POW all those years? And he said, it was just funny. Well, yeah. Well,
being the freaking shit hilarious. Well, I like rope burn too, I guess. But
I think what was McCain said, I didn't make it to Woodstock to the because I was tied up at the time.
Yeah.
I got a McCain story for you. McCain was an instructor at Meridian.
Okay.
Back about, I don't know what year it was, but he was running for president. Yeah. And the New Hampshire primary is the first primary of the year. And one day I was down there to replace a data card in the airplane or something. And I noticed there's a big white Learjet parked there. And I walk out to the hangar and I flip the new SIM card or whatever the thing is in. And as I'm walking in, it was one of those Sunday mornings in January where there's zero wind, hardly any clouds. And I'm wearing my brown leather flight jacket. And as I'm walking in, this guy walks out of the Learjet, walks down the four or five steps, and it's McCain. Well, I say, hey, Lieutenant McCain! And he kind of looks at me and tilts his head, and he walks toward me. And I walk up to him, and I put out my hand, and I say, there's no way in hell you'd remember who I am. Sir, but I was a MARCAD when you were an instructor at Meridian. And he says, first words I ever heard him speak, he says, I apologize for everything I ever said to you. Now, he never said anything to me because I was a MARCAD in helicopters at Ellison Field, and he was instructing him. But, you know, it got his attention.
Yeah.
He was known as a screamer.
Well, he must have regretted some of the things he said.
He was close to the anchor man in his class. But
I think he was second or third from the bottom. Yeah, very close. You know what they call those guys, though, right? The guy that's the anchor man, ensign, or lieutenant.
Something about Kinsman.
Naval Academy graduates.
Yeah. We had a guy, one of the instructors in ground school in pre-flight was an LDO ensign. And he'd probably been a first class. And they picked him to be an ossifer. And I've never known anyone who was as proud to be an ensign in the world. He would come into the class and he would call the class to attention. He'd, please be seated. And he'd walk up to the bulletin board and he'd take chalk and he, not the bulletin board, chalkboard, and he'd take a piece of, a chart, and he would write out fully, no abbreviations, ensign multisyllable. And every class, every always ensign syllable. That was it. So what he taught a class called Military Etiquette and Tradition or something like that. Now, one time he says, let's start off this class with a little quiz. Who knows what sort of an officer is not required to have a sword? And one of the cadets says, a one-armed officer, sir. And this guy just goes apoplectic. What? What did you say? I can't believe that you said a one-armed. Would you like another opportunity? Whereupon the kid starts thinking, well, maybe that's not right. Oh, wait, a chaplain, right? Says, okay, that's better. He had no idea that this guy was absolutely sincere. He said a one-armed officer. Yeah.
A one-armed officer, sir.
Did you ever have occasion in the Marine Corps to go through the manual of the sword after commissioning or after basic school, maybe?
Only for
weddings.
Weddings.
And there was always some
occasionally at the Marine Ball, someone would do something, but
yeah.
You got to come to our Marine Ball next year.
Yeah, that sounds like a hoot.
Where are you, Fig? Where do you live?
I'm in Kansas City.
I assume KC Moe.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, not the good.
Yeah, but
yes, sir.
But here's a clue. He does get to fly for free. So
I was thinking
I can travel.
You fly for you fly boxes.
I don't. I fly people.
He flies people. Yeah. I fly the smart passengers. So
I've got to deal with drama. Repeat does not deal with drama.
That's right.
I think you do.
So, but you can come into Manchester. I'll pick you up. We'll drive up there.
Yes,
to the ball.
Yes. Yeah. I like the way this sounds. Yeah. Hell, I'd like to come for one of the first Friday breakfasts.
That's a great idea.
Do that. Yeah, come in on a Thursday. You can stay with Repeat.
Yep.
Yes.
He's got a couch.
Yep. Well, how about you? I'll stay with you, Gunny.
That's I'm far from an airport. You'd have to. Of course, you're an airline captain. You're rich. You can afford to rent cars.
Oh yeah, I get it.
if your Tiger isn't out of annual yet.
Yeah, not yet. It's coming. It's coming.
You could you don't have to get to drive up at 0500 to get here.
No, this sounds like
you're from Pease. You're from Pease.
Hey, I had a bad connection for a little while, and so I had to reboot. If I miss this, I'm going to go back and listen to it. But have you talked about the first night of the fight at Dido?
Yes, I did. That was the night that when I got shot in the face.
Okay.
That was the first night of the Battle of Dido. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I have truly enjoyed all of these stories.
So far, so good. Yeah. Yeah. You got any? Let's see. No, Mark Hades didn't go to OCS. We knew that, but didn't go to the basic school. Yeah.
Didn't go to OCS. Didn't go to basic school.
Well, but it was kind of I don't know. I always considered AOCS OCS.
Yeah, you went to OCS. It was an AOCS. You know, for Marquette, right? I mean, you
got your attitude by Marine Staff NCOs yelled at lots of early AM.
Where there weren't any Marquettes anymore when you were there because you're so young,
right?
Were the Navy AOCs commissioned at the end of the same time as you were?
No, they were the Navy AOCs were commissioned when they
at the end of AOCS. It was the NAVCADs had to wait till they got their wings. Did you have to wait till you get your wings to get your bars? Okay.
Yeah, but they were backdated until the time that we became first class cadets, which was traditionally when you hit the boat.
Okay.
But for us, it was when you got completed with the advanced RI.
Well, that was kind of nice.
So I got my commission at the end of March, but it was backdated to January 1st, which means all my classmates at Harvard that didn't get kicked out like I did, who stayed in and got graduated with ROTC or PLC or anything, I outranked them by 6 months.
Beautiful.
That's great.
Also, all the boat school guys who are in my high school class.
Right. Yeah.
I outranked them for 6 months. Of course, that didn't last very long. It did make a little bit. If they were Navy or Army, it did. But Marines were getting promoted so fast. We were told when we got our wings, you are now a commissioned officer. The Navy captain was doing it, didn't know any better. He said, probably 24 months from today, but perhaps 18 months today, you will be promoted. Well, it turns out it was 18 months from 3 months before
From January. So I was 2 months from
I nice. Was selected for captain, and I was announced as a captain selectee in Navy Times before I pinned on my silver bars. That's how fast Marine lieutenants were getting killed.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
Not so nice, but yeah. Because Spicer talked about that. Spicer said he, you know, they told him you'd be, when he got commissioned as a second lieutenant, they said you'll be a captain in 36 months. And it was 28 months later that he pinned it on. So
that's holy smokes. I don't think it was even that. It was probably, I don't remember the month I got it, but it was maybe 27. That'd be 2 years plus three.
It got slowed back down.
Well, Gunny, I'm kind of intrigued on how it is exactly you got asked to leave Harvard.
I believe it was because of my academic performance. I had
18 months. They couldn't teach you anymore. Is that what you're saying?
They didn't manage to teach me much. That's for sure. I made the mistake of thinking that I was supposed to become a scientist. And the same semester, I took organic chemistry and functions of a complex variable, which is third year of calculus, and honors physics. We took four courses at a time. I also took conversational French. And since English is my second language, I managed to get along okay in that one. I got an A, a D, and two Fs. And they said, maybe you'd like to do something else for a few years. But please, if you'd like to return to Harvard, please let us know. And
so we can send out a rejection letter.
No, they let me back. They let me back bigger and shit.
They let you back? Nice. Okay.
I had two separate and distinct welcome home experiences when I got back from Vietnam. One wasn't until I'd been back for a couple of years. And it was when I went up. I wanted to get readmitted to Harvard. And I was a firm believer, and I imagine you guys might have become that way too, that when you're learning radio instruments, rather than take off and go from Pensacola to Mobile to Biloxi and back to Pensacola and do an approach, you learn an awful lot more if you go someplace else.
Right.
Right. Absolutely.
So I used to plan these trips where pretty much they'd go through the entire RI syllables. I'd get three or four students, put them in the belly of aircraft, and we'd take off and we'd go from Pensacola to Fort Rucker, to New River, to Atlantic City, to Long Island, to Hanscom Air Force Base, which is just west of Boston. And then we'd go back and we'd take a slightly different route on the way back. These guys loved it. Because we just happened to arrive around lunchtime on Friday in Boston, I'd say, okay, I'll see you Monday morning. I can't make you wake up. See, you're on your own. Have a good time. Be back here Monday morning at 0600 or so. And that was good. So we took that one in sometime in the spring of 69. And I went in and asked the Air Force. They're mostly National Guard people. I said, I need a car for the weekend. Could you find me a car, please? Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And they gave me a car, and I drove into Cambridge, and I parked it right next to the Harvard Lampoon Castle. And I walked into the back door of the dining room of Adam's house, where my administrative records were kept. But I walked in during a meal, and I wanted to look sharp for these guys. So I had my, now they call them alphas, short sleeve khaki trousers with creases so sharp you'd get a paper cut on them. And my ribbons of fruit salad and all my jingly janglies and all this stuff. And man, I felt good. And I walked in there and you could have heard a fucking mosquito fart. It got so quiet in there, and somebody threw a roll at me. Somebody started hissing.
Oh, and shit.
I said, probably not the best time to stop at the dining hall office. I walked right through it out the other side and went up to the senior tutor's office and talked to him. He said, yeah, we'll be happy to take you back. You want to start in the fall? I said, yep, September. And I'll need housing. And they said, yeah, well, take care of it. Here you go. So that was my unpleasant return to the States. But I'd been in Pensacola for a couple of years. So I knew what it was like. When I first got back, we flew into Travis Air Force Base. They gave us a ride to Santa Ana. We had to go through customs someplace. Coming back from a fucking war, and you got to go through customs.
Yeah, right. Doesn't that seem like pure harassment?
Yeah, it did. I got a guy to give me a ride up to San Francisco International because I knew I could fly home from there. Plus, I had a former girlfriend. We'd split up. There's no question. She wasn't my girlfriend anymore. But I really liked her family, and I wanted to see her. So I get up to San Francisco, and it's a Saturday night. There aren't any more flights coming in, but there's still somebody at the rent-a-car place. They rent a car, and I drive down to Palo Alto, where her family lived. And I start thinking, you know, this is one of those liberal campuses where they don't like military people, and I don't know how I'm going to be received. True, I've known this family all my life, but I don't know whether people are going to let me in the house. I was very apprehensive. I really did not feel thoroughly comfortable, but drive out, found the house, lights are all off. I parked in the driveway, and I'm sitting there saying, I'm supposed to yell at me, supposed to, how can you do those horrible things that people do that we don't really know anything about?
Right.
And then the light goes on upstairs. And so I start breathing hard, trying not to hyperventilate. Yeah. And then the light comes on downstairs, and I go up to the door, and there's no doorbell. So I pull open the screen door, and I bam, bam, bam. Sir. just like going to the drill.
Yeah.
And then I step back. I'm holding the screen door open, but I step back a little bit, and there's half a minute or so, and the door opens. It's Mrs. Hasdorf. And she looks at me for a minute, and she says, Rusty, thank God you're safe. We're so happy you're home.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, indeed.
So I can't complain about my welcome home at all.
There you go. Wow. I can't think of a better way to wrap this up than to say, I'm glad you're home, and I'm glad you're safe. And I thank God for you and your service, Rusty.
I want to let you, both of you know that even though you flew those fixed-wing long darts,
here he comes.
I consider you Marines. I consider you Marines.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I know repeat does.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know what repeat does. First Friday every month.
First Friday of the month. Lou's Restaurant, Hanover, New Hampshire. We're going to make it. We're going to make it somehow.
If you come up on Thursday night and you call the Hanover Inn ahead of time, it's the nicest, closest thing to a nice restaurant we have, nice hotel we have. And it is
probably the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. And tell them you would like a room and you'd like the salute rate.
There you go. Okay.
Which is very, you get a $500 to $600 room for like a buck and a half.
Nice. And very cool.
It's very nice. That's the place we have our Marine Corps ball every year. And we put on a good show, good ball.
Very nice.
There are a lot of Marines, many of whom no longer wear the uniform. Many of whom no longer wear the uniform, even though they served for 4 years.
Right.
There are also members of the other branches of service, what we call the sissy services.
Yes.
Sister services.
Sister services.
We generally have a lot of people from other nations military, and every branch of the United States military and also the Air Force.
How big is it? How many people?
200.
Wow, that's good.
We have a guest. We generally alternate enlisted 1 year, officer another year.
Yeah.
We've had a master sergeant who is operations chief from MARSOC. We've had a couple generals. What's most important is that they be Marines who like to hang out with Marines.
Right.
And it's a really good thing. Oh, our oldest Marine so far until last year, maybe until 2 years ago, we always had a World War II Marine as the oldest Marine present. The youngest Marine usually hasn't yet reached 20 and is usually on special leave right after IPR.
Right out of the boot. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
So, well, I've been keeping you away from supper for a long time. So,
no, not at all. So thank you, Gunny. And again, thank you for your service. We greatly appreciate it.
What a true pleasure. We are so sincere about that. I have amazingly enjoyed your
story.
Well,
I've enjoyed.
And I'm going to.
You're what?
I can't wait to listen to them again.
Wait, no, you won't.
When the podcast comes out.
Oh, okay. You can do that, but you'll get new ones. Wait till you start your. So there I was, starts getting a little more circulation and you start getting more combat Marines.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there are phenomenal stories out there. We will see you actually in. Many of us are there almost every Friday. There's somebody there, but it's the Jarhead nice. Breakfast the first Friday of the month. So we'll look for you the 1st of June.
I'm looking forward. Well, a couple other thank yous we got to throw out there real quick. First and foremost, Fig, do you remember who it is? Some Dave guy. What was his name?
Dave, my man, Hamilton. Thank you, Dave Hamilton.
That's right. He's the one that gives us all the know-how and the expertise and helps put us up and online, and we're grateful to Dave for everything he's done for us. Thank you so much to our sponsor,
robinsbirdbraindesigns.com.
As we mentioned earlier in the show, we've also got a glossary page. So there I was, .us/glossary. Follow us on Facebook. So there I was, .us/Facebook. Same thing on Twitter. Email us if you got questions. Reach out to sticks@sothereiwas.us or Fig or Repeat, R-E-P-E-T-E, @sothereiwas.us. Keep doing what you've been doing all along. Please share this show with
the Share the show. Share the show.
It just isn't that hard. Tell a friend about it. sothereiwas.us/subscribe will get you to the page you need to be at so you can listen to every show when it comes out. We try to come out Thursday mornings. I'm not sure. Fig, I think I'm hearing something in the background. What? You hear anything?
You know what? Those are the Dos Gringos, two F-16 pilots that make the Air Force sound good.
They do indeed. We're grateful to them for coming on our show, for letting us use their music for our show. It's wonderful music. 4 albums, Dos Gringos. So thank you to them. So everybody else, in the meantime, stay safe, check 6, and we usually give this at the beginning of the show, but don't let go of the collective.
Well, there I was, crossing the pond, and you could see that I wasn't exactly fond of all the shit I was wearing on that day. Now an F-16 is cramped enough, but it's even worse with all that stuff supposed to save your life. But we knew there was no way. Cause when you're going down the North Atlantic, man, it's over.
What's a song say, Fig?
It's over.